Everybody, blessings to you. Here we are again, 2025. Still kind of amazing to me that we've made it to this year, isn't it? Just incredible. And I'm wondering what the Lord's going to do this year. Maybe you are too. And we pray for incredible blessings ahead and for this church, incredible open doors. Last year, there was now kind of infamous interview on NBC with a quarterback of a team that just actually got eliminated for the playoffs by the Chiefs. But he's a Christian, and he was in an interview. And as part of that interview, he shared that Jesus was the reason for the life that he had. And when they later played the interview on later news segments and when they posted it online, they cut that part out. They cut that part out. And I want to talk about that. I want to mention it. I'm not trying to hammer NBC because, but I want to talk about that because for this man, I can tell you, that was the most important thing that he said in that interview. Right? And that was the part they cut out. But it wasn't important to somebody, which is why they cut it out. Maybe they'd say, well, we needed to, you know, shorten the whole thing or whatever. But this, to be fair, is the kind of expression that is increasingly limited in our culture today. It's offensive to people in our culture today sometimes. For a while now, it's been that way. And I want to open with this because I want to talk about the world we live in today, in our time, in our country today, this current technological culture we live in, where it makes possible for that to happen because it's changing. Our culture is changing. It's been changing for a long time. And if he thanked his mom in that interview for the life that she provided him, that would have been left in. And if he'd even just said, I thank my lucky stars for the life that I have, that would have been left in. So what's different about the life that Jesus brings to people? Whatever it is, it affects all of us as Christians in our world today. This is just something that's happening. It makes it awkward for us to share our faith and talk about what the Lord is in our lives because no one wants a negative reaction, right? And if you think that's the response you're going to get, makes it more difficult to want to share. You think, I'm just going to keep this to myself. A few years ago, I was moving into the place that I live in now, and I had some neighbors come and talk to me. Came up and they introduced themselves, this couple, and as they're talking to me, we're chit-chatting about some different things, and they said to me, you have such a positive energy coming out of you. It's this energy. And they're like talking to each other. Doesn't he have this energy? And, you know, it's just, there's a happiness just on your face as you're talking to us. Now, the remarkable thing is I'm going through a really hard time in my life. And they have no idea what I'm going through right then. But that's my testimony, right? But if I mention Jesus, whoops. That's not the thing that people expect to hear in our world today. And this is what's happening. And here's the box we're put in. The box we're put in, there's a few different components to it. Let me describe it for you, and you're aware of this. But one is that you're a silly, religious, superstitious person if you start talking this way, right? And this is what's taught at all our universities, that, you know, only things that you can scientifically measure with your senses count as valid knowledge. That is, by the way, a self-contradictory preconception. But this is what's taught in all the universities. And so people in our culture can immediately dismiss a message because you're a superstitious person if you start sharing. Second is that Christians are the worst people around. This is the thing that's being told. You're just saying that because you don't want me to think you're a bad person or you want to think of yourself as a better person, and that's why you're sharing this idea. That's all it is, right? It's a way to make you feel better about who you are. And the third idea that's out there is there's so many religions in our world today. I mean, how dare you tell me that you have the truth? I mean, that's offensive to people. And when people say there, you know, there's so many religions, how can one be true? What they're really saying is none of them are true because they all contradict each other. So that's a way of dismissing pretty much everything. But this is a concept that's out in our culture. It makes it really difficult to talk because you're immediately an offense to people. So it's a closed door to talk about the life in Christ. And at the same time, though, and here's the amazing thing, everything's going wrong in our world, right? People are hurting in our world today. People are farther and farther from the lives they need. I spoke last week, I was talking about deaths from drug overdose. I mentioned that. We lose 100,000 people a year in this country to drug overdose. But Set aside the 100,000 people who die. What about the millions of people who use narcotics because they have so much pain in life and they just need to get by? And that's the only way they know how to do it. This is the culture that we're living in. Our lucky stars are not giving us the lives we need, right? In culture today. Or science, or all this technological gadgetry that we have. It's not giving us that life. It's not leading us to what our souls need in the world today. Which leads me to a proposition, and this is what I want to talk about today, and this is what I want you to think about in 2025. This is my proposition. The world has never needed the life that Jesus offers more than it does today. In this world, in this culture, in our Western technological consumerism culture, we're empty today. Emptier than we've ever been. Distracted by a million options in our culture that we're delivered all the time, ways to spend our time. We're entertained like we've never been before. We're medicated like we've never been before, but we're empty. But there's a solution to that. There's always been a solution. There's one solution to that. That's my argument today. That's what I want to talk about. There are not many solutions. If there were many solutions, you wouldn't see these problems happening today. There's one solution. And there's only one solution I'm going to argue, but I'm not going to explain today, because it's baked into you. You are made to have one path to the life you need. You're created that way. And so all these other ideas that are out there are not going to lead you to that life. There's only one person who can give you what your soul needs. So our text today is going to be John chapter 10. And Jesus is talking to a group of religious leaders in this passage. And I'm going to set a bigger context in a little bit, but I want to explain to you, Jesus is standing, there's a group of people standing around him, mostly religious leaders, and mostly they hate him. They think he's evil, they think he's crazy, most of the people that are standing around him, I don't know how many people, let's say 40, 50, 60 people. And then his disciples are also there, and they're the ones that are recording this. And there are also some people who are listening to him, and they're listening to what he's saying, and they're believing him. But Jesus doesn't fit into their box. That's why they hate him, right? He's boxed in the same way we are today in our culture. Some think he's crazy. Some think he's an offense to what they're saying and their sensibilities. But a few people believe him. So he's going to give them a word picture to get through to them here. It's a metaphor, or like we might call this a parable of a sort. Why? And it explains at least basically why some people don't listen to him. And so here's my first outline point. The world is like a sheep pen, and only some of the sheep follow the shepherd's voice and go out to pasture. Okay, so I'm going to read this for you. Very truly I tell you, Pharisees, these are the religious leaders, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls out his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Okay, so they understand this picture, but they don't understand the point of it at this moment. So it's of a sheep pen. At least that's our English word that we use to describe this. Really, probably, it's just translated that way because we don't have another way of explaining it. It's probably a courtyard with high walls that are built around it to protect sheep in this culture. And there's one way in and out of this courtyard. That's the only way to manage this and make sure that everything's okay and the sheep are safe. There's only one way in or out. That's the way they would build it. And that's the gate. And sometimes the word gate here is translated door. Doesn't matter. It's the same idea. And Jesus uses a figure of speech because they're familiar with this picture to them. And the reason he tells a story instead of just telling these people what he's thinking is because sometimes a story is the way that you bypass someone's defense mechanisms, right? Because when people don't want to hear something in life and you start talking to them, they just go, you know, they just shut you out. You've probably had this happen. Or they'll go, yeah, if you have kids, they'll probably go, nah, 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 or something like that. Right? Isn't that what kids do? Because they don't want to hear what you're saying. If you've been a parent, you probably had something like that happen. Or they'll do something. They'll cover their ears. they'll refuse to engage, or they'll disqualify you. They'll say, yeah, yeah, you Christian, right? Because that's what happens when we share our faith. That's what people do. They shut us out. They put us in a box. They make a box and put you into it, and then people in that box, they don't have to listen to them. And Jesus, they're doing the same thing to Jesus. So Jesus gives them a picture, and then they're going to take in the picture. Yeah, we understand this picture. And then Jesus explains, you're in the picture, and I'm in the picture. And when he explains it all of a sudden, they can't not listen because they've already heard the story. So then all of a sudden it dawns on them. This is a technique Jesus uses for people that are refusing to hear him and have defense mechanisms. So maybe they're going to like the story when they hear the conclusion, or maybe they're going to get mad because they don't want to be the person in the story that he's making them out to be. So the simple insight is that Jesus is the shepherd in this story, and the sheep are the people who hear his message. Okay, these are the people that are standing around, and most of them are not listening to his message, but some are. And this is the situation that he's dealing with at that moment. And some follow him, and the story explains why. They are his sheep. That's why they follow him. Some don't listen to him, and they don't even know his voice. That's okay. Those are not his sheep. Some people are not his. It's the same today, people. The people in the crowd and everyone you know is one or the other kind of sheep. This is what Jesus explained. This is the world, and it's always been this way. So Jesus is two times in this story. He's going to explain. So some people might call this a mixed metaphor, but I can explain it. So he is the shepherd in the story. But he's not just a shepherd, because there are different kinds of shepherds. He's going to explain he's the good shepherd. He's going to explain why in a moment. And he's also going to explain he's the gate to the sheep pen. How can you be both the shepherd and the gate in the story? And this is possible, just in the way this culture works. Sometimes they didn't have a physical door, and the shepherd would sleep there. And he would be the gate, protecting the sheep. And he would be the good shepherd, right? So it's possible Jesus is thinking of that. But it doesn't matter. This is the way he wants us to think of the story. So point two on my outline. Jesus is the gate. This is the first thing he's going to make. And this is what it means. He is uniquely the way to have the life for which we were created. So this is what he goes on to say to them. Now he's going to explain to them, this is the significance of this story. Therefore, Jesus said again, very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. So what Jesus is saying is he is the way that people reach the life that God wants for them and intends for them. And there's one gate, people, and he is it. That's what he's telling these people who are not even listening to him and hating him, most of these people. The people who listen to him, he leads them to that life. He also says, whoever enters through me will be saved. He makes that point as he's explaining this. And by saying that, and we have to understand that, he means that people who don't listen to me are not saved. Okay, so whatever the big picture is, there's some critical reason why you have to listen to him. He's going to lead you and is the only way to get to the life that you really need. So this is the thing that sounds so pretentious. It sounded pretentious to them, and it sounds pretentious today. Why some of the people are here not listening to him and don't want to hear him is that he's saying, you're the only way? You're the gate? Who are you that you think you have the way to life? You're just a man standing in front of us, right? Well, the answer's simple. The other voices Jesus explains, the others don't lead you there. It's really simple. They're robbers and thieves. The other people speaking to you, they are taking life from you. They're not leading you to the life you need. They're focused on themselves, Jesus is saying. All who have come before me are robbers and thieves. So when he says all who have come before me, he doesn't mean in time, like those guys from, remember last week or a year ago. That's not what Jesus is saying. What he's saying is everyone else you've ever listened to until now, those people are not leading you to that life, and it's that statement is true for anyone in any time, Jesus is saying. The other voices that you've listened to this point are not leading you to the place you need to be. And we've all listened to a lot of voices, right? All of us have at different points in our lives. Think about your journey. A lot of perspectives on how to have a good life. There's a million perspectives out there in our culture. They're constantly marketed to us. I mean, you know, we're fascinated by the ones that are going to pop up in the Super Bowl, right? Those are the most famous ones. And so we're all going to watch it really just for the commercials. Nobody leaves at the commercial breaks in the Super Bowl for that reason. But they leave you emptier, these solutions. This is what Jesus is saying. There's a lot of solutions to make you feel better at any moment, to tell you you really need this thing, but they leave you emptier than when you started. They rob you of something. You can spend your whole life chasing a picture of life. Some people do this because of some lyric in a popular song that's captivated them. And they'll follow that lyric. Or they'll see some image and they'll think, I have to have that. I'm going to do whatever it takes in my life until I can finally have that thing. And then when you get it, you're like, oh wait, I need something else. Right? Isn't that how it is in our culture today? That's how it is. And you end up with nothing in the end if you keep jumping from thing to thing and listen to all the different voices. And many people do that. We don't have cultural crises for no reason in our culture. We have cultural crises because people listen to those voices. That's why we're in the spot we're at today in our culture. People have tried everything and they have no hope left, right? So Jesus says, though, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Very interesting construction. The word full, actually in the language, is modifying the word life. And it's difficult because we don't say full life really in English. That doesn't mean anything. And so the translators of the NIV have translated, I've come that they may have life and have it to the full. But really what Jesus is talking about is a quality of life. And some translations will translate this abundant life to try to get to that idea. Maybe that's something, the way you've heard this in the past, abundant life. And that's actually closer to the grammar of this passage. And what he means by that is the true life. It means different from the life that's out there. I've got the abundant life. You can't get that out there. I've got that. I'm the gate to that life. And he means that's the life you're supposed to have. You were made to have that life. Not the temporary life you get from watching commercials or for throwing yourself into the momentary happiness of popular culture. But it means God's desire for you. And it means the life that you can have if you listen to me. It's everything you need. And by the way, that life never ends. That's a good thing about this life. All the other stuff ends. So if Jesus is the gate, you can't keep this private. You got to talk to people about this life, right? The people in your life, they need to know about the life, the abundant life. And you're made to feel stupid in our culture today. We're talking about it. But here's the logic that you need to think about in 2025. There are two options. Jesus' way, this is what he's telling you in this story. Jesus' way and everything else. There are two options. Picking the one option that works and dismissing the things that don't work is not stupid. It's the only rational choice. It's what you do every day in life. You don't have scientific proofs. You pick the thing that works. And you don't do the thing that doesn't work. And the everything else really doesn't work. And if it did work, we wouldn't have the world that we're seeing today in our culture, right? We wouldn't have emptiness, emotional impulse. We wouldn't see violence spiking the way it's spiking in our cities, addiction, people wasting their time. We have all this extra time because of the efficiency of technology, and we waste it all. This technology gives us both more time and more ways to waste it. It's amazing, right? Broken marriages, division between people, social media. People have never had a bigger opportunity to attack more people than they do today. It's amazing, and they do. We've got broken families, people acting on emotional impulse over everything in our culture today. Didn't used to be like this. And it's not in spite of the fact that people are less interested in Jesus than ever. It's because of that, that this is happening. When you have two choices, picking the one that works is rational. Okay? Okay, second way Jesus puts himself in the story, he's the good shepherd. So here's my outline, point three. Jesus is the good shepherd. His voice can be trusted because he gave his own life to lead you to the life you need, right? I am the good shepherd, Jesus says. So he's continuing on. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd. So he's distinguishing himself from a shepherd. He's the good shepherd. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me. Same relationship. And I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. So he's not just a shepherd. A lot of people out there claim to be shepherds. He's the good shepherd. He's connected to the people who hear him. He will never leave you. He loves you, Jesus. And in fact, he will die for the sheep. And he did die for the sheep. Now, as he's telling this story, he hasn't died yet. So these people, it's one of the reasons they think he's crazy. What are you talking about? You lay down your life for the sheep. They're like, what does that mean? Okay? John, many times in his gospel, will reflect back. At the time when Jesus said these things, his disciples did not understand what he meant. Okay? Because later they did, but at this moment, it was one of those things. But he's still asking them, trust me. And this is the difference between Jesus and every other voice in our culture today. Jesus doesn't want anything from you in exchange for that life. He isn't going to take life from you. He's not going to take your money. That's love. See, real love is unconditional. And that's what Jesus is explaining. When you really love somebody, you don't need anything back from them. If it's conditional, it's not love. This is 1 Corinthians 13. Okay? Refresh ourselves. And it's an amazing proposition, this thing that Jesus is saying, because it's the difference between him and every other voice that's out there. They all want something from you, right? Those Super Bowl commercial ads are not there to help your life. They want something from you. You know that. Everything in our cultural perspective of the good life is conditional. Every single other voice. The more money you have, the bigger piece of that life you can have, right? Which means some of us are never going to have a whole lot of that life. We're going to wish, gosh, I wish I could have that property over there or that car or whatever. And you have to invest all your years sometimes just to get a little part of that in our cultural framework today, working and saving. And even then, you know, maybe something happens and it all goes up in flames. I mean, this is the amazing thing about life. And you're starting over again. Imagine these people getting to that point and not knowing about the abundant life. Oh, I can't even imagine. But you don't need that to get what Jesus offers. You don't need that. Which is not to say that it doesn't cost you something here to accept the life of Jesus. But here's what it costs you. It costs you all the things that are hurting you. That's what you give up to have the life that Jesus is talking about. All the things that rob you of peace, you got to turn those over. All the things that you've been trusting in under your own control, you got to open your hands. Jesus will take them from you and he'll give you the abundant life. That's all it costs. All the things that steal, let them go. And the good shepherd will lead you to where you need to be. But we still don't know what kind of life we're talking about when we get to John 10. And part of the reason for that is I've taken this passage out of context because really John 10 happens with this group of people. Who are this group of people? Well, they're the people from John chapter 9. So I want you to take a step back. If you really want to understand the point of this, we'd have to step back into John chapter 9. And really to understand John 9, you're probably thinking, what about John 8? And next thing we know, we're back in John chapter 1, which is really the key to the whole gospel. So maybe this is a year where you want to know Jesus and read the gospel of John. But let me tell you a little bit about John chapter 9, and we're not going to work through it because it's too big to cover here in this. But I'm going to summarize for you what just happened in John chapter 9. In John chapter 9, Jesus meets a man who is born blind. Okay, that's why these people are all standing around him in John 10, and he tells them this story. Okay, so Jesus meets this guy. He's been blind from birth. Jesus spits in some dirt, and he makes some mud out of it, and he puts it on this guy's eyes, because this guy's begging. And Jesus says, go wash your face in the pool of Siloam, okay, which is in Jerusalem, and we know where it is today. It's been archaeologically discovered. Anyway, this man goes to this pool, and he washes his eyes, and he can see for the first time in his entire life. And people are like, what happened? Isn't this the guy who's been begging his whole life? And they're like, what happened to you? And he explains. This guy spit in the dirt and he made this mud and he put it on my eyes and I can see now. And the people are all, what? And they're all talking about this and they can't figure it out. So they take this guy to the religious leaders, the Pharisees, and they bring him to him. And they're like, what's going on? And they're like, and he's like, he tells them what Jesus did. And they want to know about this, and they really don't like Jesus. Here's the problem. Jesus doesn't fit in their box. Okay, so they don't want to listen to Jesus. So right away, they're like, no. Like, something's wrong here. And like, bring in this guy's parents. So they go get the parents of this guy, who's been blind since birth, and they're like, is this your son? And they're like, yeah, that's our son. He's been blind his entire life. And they're like, what did this man Jesus do to this guy? What's going on here? And they're like, don't ask us. They're scared of the leaders. They go, don't ask us. He's an adult. Talk to him about it. And so they haul this guy up and they're questioning him. And they're trying to figure out, like, how did this happen? And one of the facts that comes out of this happened on a Saturday, which is a bad thing in this culture because Saturday is the Sabbath and it's supposed to be the day of rest according to the law of Moses. And they're interpreting this as like, when you spit into the dirt and make mud and put it on somebody's eyes, that's work. So you've broken one of God's laws. This is how they're going to interpret it. I don't know what kind of work that is, spitting into some dirt, but they classify it that way so that they can put Jesus in a box. Do you see it? Sinner. Yeah, you can't be from God because you did some work on the Sabbath. So they're asking the man about this. You tell us he's a sinner, and they're pushing him, trying to get him to say that. And the man's like, I think he's a prophet. The words that came from his mouth. But they're like, you know, and they're mad at him. And so if you think you have trouble today talking about your faith, this has been going on for 2,000 years, people. This was going on back in the time. Jesus is doing this and people are hating him. So the message has been blocked for 2,000 years. So they're like, admit this guy's a sinner who did this for you. And the man says, I don't know what he is. He says, but I know this. I used to be blind and now I'm not. Right? That's the life I have now. And so then the blind man says a thing to them and they're pushing him. They're like, and so I think he's trolling them. Okay. And this is what people do. This is a big word in our culture today where you say something just deliberately to set people off and kind of expose them as being absurd, right? This is what trolling is. So if you don't know, the cultural meme now. So I think the blind man, the guy who was blind now is trolling the leaders. And so he says this to him. He says, why do you keep asking me these questions about Jesus? Do you want to be his followers too? So what he says to them, and they're like, no, they're thinking he should be our follower, right? And they're like, no, we're the followers of Moses. Like, we're not following this man. We don't even know where he's come from. That's what they say. And this is where the blind man makes a statement. This is the one part I'm going to read to you from John chapter 9, which is the key, the thing that he says to them when they say they don't know where he comes from. And it solves everything. It blows the box apart. Okay, here's the thing they say. Verses 30 to 33. The man answered, now that is remarkable to the leaders. You don't know where he comes from. Yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. In one moment, exposes the absurdity of these people who won't listen to Jesus. In this is the logic for you in 2025, people. Because we think, these people 2,000 years ago, maybe you think, well, they were superstitious people, right? They believed a lot of things about miracles. No, no, listen to them. Nobody had ever seen this happen before when this happened. This rocked them. But even they had never heard of anyone doing what Jesus did. And common sense here, it's very simple. Jesus isn't just another voice speaking to you in a world of people telling you to have a better life. Okay? This is my last outline point. Jesus brings abundant life. The life he offers is powerful and transformative. You can't get it out there any other way. It is the life that comes from God. Obvious to the man whose life has been transformed by Jesus and should have been obvious to every single person standing there, but it wasn't. Because they boxed him in. They didn't want to hear. That's why he tells the story he does in John chapter 10. So what it tells us is that the life that Jesus has and that he offers to you is unlike the life that you get out there in this world today. You can't get it any other way. Nobody had ever seen that kind of life before this moment. It is a powerful, transformed life. That's the life Jesus has for you. He shares it. He explains in the next chapter as he's starting to talk to all these people with those who hear his voice and follow him. Those are the people that share in that life. It is different than material, biological life that we're all born with. It's a different kind of life. It comes from the one who made you. Takes you all the way back to John chapter 1. He came into the world that he made to bring life, and the life was the light of all mankind. Okay, chapter 1. So he made you to have his life. There's one way to get it because of that. It's not meant to be an offense. It's just the way it is. He is the gate, and he leads you to that life. He is the good shepherd. He wants you to have it. So as all these people are standing around trying to figure out who Jesus is, there's something right in front of them that is the key to what they need. It's a simple question they should be asking themselves, but because they've put Jesus in a box, they can't. And the question is this. If Jesus can open the eyes of a man born blind, can he help your life today? And do you want him to? Right? It's true for us, and it's true for them. Should you listen to him? Why don't people listen to him? So he paints a picture. It's true for everyone who's come after this time, who wants the abundant life. It's true for the people you know, and the people you love, the people that God put in your life. In the end, there are two ways to go. There are two voices. There are two destinies. And you have to pick one or the other. And Jesus is saying, listen to me. I'm going to lead you to what you really need. There's the path that God calls you to, and then there's everybody else out there. Right? The one most people go for. And sometimes we're drawn into that life. That's what I talked about last week. And we shouldn't be, but we do. And we get stumbled up in our own lives. But it's always been this way, and it's always going to be this way until the end. There are many voices that call you to the other life, to a life of material fulfillment, a life of temporary emotional fulfillment. That's what pop culture is all about, people. That thrill, that moment, right? They point you to control in your life. Who doesn't want control? They're saying, yeah, control and prosperity, that's what your heart needs. You need to be in control. That's what they're telling you. And so this is what's being marketed out there. But one voice calls you to the life you're made for. It's the life you're built for, Jesus is telling them. One voice leads you to that life. And one person loves you so much, they're going to give it to you. That life is not the cultural dream. This is the problem. It's in tension with it a lot of times in life. Sometimes the abundant life leads you through disappointment and heartache in life. It leads you through it. It's not a quick fix, the abundant life. Sometimes it means you're not in control in life. You want control over circumstances in your life. Sometimes it means you let go and trust in the middle of difficulties in your life. That's really hard for people today. Sometimes it means you don't get all the cool things you want. You're like, why don't you give me this cool thing, God? I don't understand. Maybe you're not there. This is the thing. You understand the abundant life isn't about cool things. Sometimes the abundant life is about having only your daily bread. But then in the end you realize, I didn't need anything else. It's all good. In the end it all works out. Have you been that spot in your life? And God draws you through it because you have him. And nothing can ever take that away from you in life. The one who loves you. It's about peace on your face and in your heart. When things are going bad in life, joy that you know blessings are ahead. I don't know what they are, but I know they're ahead because somebody loves me. Wow, what is more important than that in life? And God is going to give you things that are going to last forever. So if you're wondering how to share Jesus with people in 2025, but you're not talking to them about the abundant life because of how you're made to feel, because you're afraid of offending somebody, because somebody's going to think you're stupid, you're falling into a trap. You're stepping into a box. Do you see that? You're letting yourself be put inside a box that you need to get out of. Get out of the box. It doesn't have anything to do with any of those things. There's nothing stupid about telling people that Jesus has the life they need. When you see them struggle and are dealing with heartache and loss and frustration in their lives and emptiness, explain to people, Jesus has the thing they're looking for in 2025. Right? So as we head into 2025, let's clear our heads. Tune out the noise. Right? Let's tune out the noise this year, people. The Good Shepherd is speaking to you in 2025. Listen to Jesus this year. Right? Okay, let me pray. Lord, you are the Good Shepherd. You are the gate. It's been true for 2,000 years, Lord. You will give us the thing that we need. As we are people coming before you this year, Lord, a lot of us have been drawn into a lot of distraction. Lord, let this be the year where we listen to you and come to know you like we've never known you before and share it with the people in our lives. Jesus, open those doors. Give us the courage. Give us the conviction to help lead people to the life they need. In your name.